Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I'm here today with Mr. Bill Fitch, the wine director of Vinegar Hill House and the recently opened Hillside. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. I came in this past weekend. I had such a great time. I've been a fan of Vinegar Hill House for a long time, so it was really exciting to check out Hillside as well. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's great to be up and running.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things that got me excited about Vinegar Hill House was the person who puts together one of my favorite beverage programs, my favorite wine list in the city, said that it was one of her favorite wine lists. Juliet Pope is a huge, huge fan, and so when Juliet mentions that she likes something, I listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, me too. It's an honor for me. It kind of blows my mind, actually.
Yeah, it's always such an honor to have someone like that to not only come into the restaurants, but to say nice things about it. Well, you've had quite a history in New York with restaurants. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the industry and your story?
Well, I guess it started in Portland, Oregon. I got into wine because I was sort of obsessed with perfume. I had not been able to smell for a couple of years and had surgery, and afterwards I could smell. And I got insanely into perfume and spent all my money on perfume. And a friend sort of took pity on me and told me that about wine. It was this super cool thing, and it was mostly olfactory. So I guess through that, and I ended up getting a job in a place in Portland that had like 1,000 European wines. It was kind of a cross between a Viennese cafe and some kind of British pub, tavern. I jumped right in. The owner knew that I read lots of books, and she was like, "You can learn this." You know, I helped her basically. Manage the cellar, help her buy things because her husband had died. So I got super into that for a few years, but there weren't really sommeliers back then. This is like the early 90s, and I didn't really think of it as a career or anything. I just kind of got into it. I traveled again after that, and around 1998, I came to New York for the second time, and a friend who worked at Il Buco told me they needed a wine person. So I went and met the owner, and she liked me. And that year, Andrew Bell's courses, I guess, came to started or whatever. So they helped me, helped pay for that for me. So.
And how important were wine courses for you in your wine study?
I would say that quite important. Like I had a pretty broad knowledge, but I didn't have any context. You know, I knew a lot of Burgundies. I knew a lot of French wines, a lot of Italian wines, but not a lot of specific information where everything fit together. I read a bunch of books, but that really helped me. That course actually helped me a lot. Just giving me, I'm a lay of the land, you know, where to, the world wine in general, I got to know a lot better.
And did you take any other courses as well, or did you focus on America? That's the American Sommelier Association.
Yeah, back in 98. No, that was it. I just read a lot, you know, and I was always blown away by people that could blind taste, and I couldn't do that then. Now I can. Now I just from experience. But that course, just meeting lots of people like Roger DeGorn, few others, it kind of blew my mind and inspired me.
Okay, so give us a little bit more chronology. So you're at Il Buco, and then what happened?
At Il Buco, from 98 to about 2003, I think. I was obsessed with wine. I don't know, mostly Italian because of Il Buco. After 2000, I started getting asked to consult and make wine lists for places. So I did ones that seemed easy to me, like The Park. I don't know if you remember that place. No, it was like a sort of clubby restaurant. It's still there on 10th Avenue and 17th Street.
Oh, yeah.
Huge volume, which was kind of a fun thing to find wine lists to run. I did the Maritime Hotel, both the restaurants there, Matsuri and La Bottega. I did a place called Salt. Before that, it was called Stella. It was all New World wines.
In Soho.
Oh. Yeah, it was on McDougal, south of Houston.
Mm-hmm. And each time you went and put together a wine list, what was your thought process? How do you approach it?
Work with a chef, figure out what kind of food, the sort of style of the place that they want. It was a while ago, too, so the contexts were, the wines that people were drinking were completely different. Like, that's one thing that's weird to me is how just the trends in wine. You know, I couldn't really have a wine list before without Pinot Grigio or Shiraz, you know, perfectly wonderful wines, but not exactly in fashion anymore. Although I think maybe they're coming back into fashion, if one can say that.
Now maybe Muscadet, or what do you think's the... You can't have a wine list now without...
God, I don't even know anymore. It's sort of icky even to talk about it, but Girard certainly is a cool...
It's a cool thing, right?
People demand their Girard. Cru Beaujolais, I mean, you know, they're... I can't sell Chardonnay, for example, I can sell a little bit, but I think it's such a great grape, and I have a hard time selling... You know, sometimes a Girard Chardonnay, yeah.
Girard Chardonnay,
right. A Chablis occasionally. But otherwise, it's hard. Like, even the most amazing wines, like, I guess, you know, a lot of people are, I don't know, it's boring or something.
So I would, tell me if this is a fair characterization of your list. It is a list that really focuses on wines that are produced very naturally without too many... You know, without messing with things too much. If that is, first of all, is that a fair characterization? And secondly, if it is, when did you first get into this kind of style of wines, and what draws you to that?
Well, I guess it's fair to say that I do like that style of wine. I wouldn't say I'm a more extreme member of that. The natural wine community, but I do like them when they're good. They're incredibly pure. I mean, like everybody says, it's true. But I'm not. There's plenty of unnatural wines, I guess, on the list. But I first got into it, I guess, through Jenny and Francois back in when they started in 2000. I don't know, whatever it was, 2000. I can't remember. I love those wines, in particular Domaine de Peyre, the Auvergne Gamays. But then when I moved to Paris in 2004 with my ex-wife, and I didn't think I was going to work in the wine world again. I thought that was the end of that. But I got really into the Paris, you know, wine culture, which is more and more a natural wine culture, met a lot of the winemakers, went to visit the vineyards. I just got really into it.
You know, yeah, you have a unique position having that expertise in Paris. But how often are you in Paris now?
I'd say half the year, but it's a couple months here, a month here. I go back and forth depending on how what's going on at the restaurants.
How did you get that gig? I want to figure out how to get to Italy half the year and be a happy camper.
I'm very fortunate that my bosses and slash partners are super nice, and I wasn't even sure I was going to move back when I started talking to them about working in the restaurant, but they were cool with it, and it kind of helps. I mean, I do learn a lot when I'm there, and I go to lots of vineyards and meet. It's like a constant education.
Yeah.
So it's. I suppose it's. I hope it's good for them.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people characterize the new Parisian wine scene, what the kind of places that are opening up, as similar to what's going on in Brooklyn right now. Do you think that is a fair assessment?
Totally. In fact, in my neighborhood, all the sort of the completely unfoodie French people refer to the new cool restaurants as Brooklyn. C'est tellement Brooklyn. Like everybody's, they sort of shiver with excitement when there's something Brooklyn-y. There's a lot of, actually now it's more Canadian, non-French chefs opening these places. It's a lot of Japanese people now, a lot of great Japanese chefs who can seem to do French food like unbelievably well. A few Canadians, a few Americans. So it's kind of great, in my opinion, for Paris that they've opened up to non-French restaurateurs and stuff. They're excited about them.
And what are some of your favorite places that you've been going to?
I guess, there's... everybody likes Le Baratin. Le Baratin is really great. Le Ver Volet. But those... Now, frankly, they've been around a while. There's a new place I just tried called Roosevelt, which is awesome. What else is good? I mean, Reno is really good. R-I-N-O. It's a sort of Italian-y, slightly Italian-y, sweet, cute little place. In my neighborhood, there's a great place called Le Grand Huit, and it's like you're going to some little village. The food's pretty good, but it's just the conviviality, and I kind of like that, hanging out in comfortable places, even if maybe the food's not the best in the world.
Yeah, that's really. I went there a few years ago, and it was just blown away by how many casual, down home, comfortable, and familiar kind of places there were. You think of Paris as something that where it's a little bit more buttoned up, but that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. Like when I first moved there in 2004, I thought I was shocked. I thought I even missed New York, though I had wanted to move to Paris my whole life. Because I thought the food culture and wine culture sucked. They didn't really. I just didn't know where to go. And little by little, there's so many places now that have sort of, I guess you could say Brooklynized. I mean, just more become more casual.
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting that Brooklyn is becoming this brand, a way to describe something, an adjective.
I think that it's. I guess it is a Brooklyn thing. I mean, I'm sort of from Portland, Oregon, and they think that they're, that sort of kind of restaurant's been there for a long time. It's hard for me to say I think there's, Brooklyn's just so much bigger and, so much, has more access to things, but there is something Portland about it, too. In fact, Paris just had a little Portland festival bands, Portland bands, food people.
That blows my mind.
It was just a little a week. It's Portland week. Isn't that unbelievable?
That is so unbelievable. Okay, so we're going to take just a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask more about some of your favorite places to eat and drink here in the States, and a few more questions. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bill Fitch from Vinegar Hill House.
You're listening to Lung by Iggy Dean on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
We're back with Bill Fitch from Vinegar Hill House and Hillside, single-handedly bringing interesting wines to Vinegar Hill section of Brooklyn. Yeah, well, maybe with Bill and his team. But
oh, I don't know if it's single-handedly. yeah, certainly I'm lucky to have the freedom to do a lot of things that. In past jobs, I haven't been free to do, so I have to say thanks to those, to my partners.
Well, tell us a little bit about this your corner of Brooklyn, where you are. This interesting neighborhood. Is it a neighborhood?
Yeah, it's a few blocks. I'm envious of the people that live there, but it's quiet. I think we're pushing against the limits of that quiet. Having two places on one block has been, you know, it's nice of the neighbors to let us be there.
It's very charming. I mean, we were right there, and it was a cold night, but you're looking outside, and there's the cobblestone streets, small, very, very old houses, and my girlfriend kept saying, let's move here.
Yeah, I would like, if I didn't live for free in my uncle's basement, I'd probably want to move there too, but they also have big bugs. Like it's like a little wildlife preserve in terms of. I mean, as far as it's sort of like a little seriously huge bugs and like big fluffy caterpillars. Like I never see those in Manhattan. Maybe in Central Park, but so yeah, I kind of it's sort of like a little oasis. They film sometimes. What's it called? Boardwalk Empire. There,
I could totally see that filming like complete period pieces because it does not look like this century at all. Yeah. And then tell us a little bit about the wine. It's one of the things that I really love about the wine list, and that I admire on wine lists like yours and Franny's. I think they have a really great list as well. Is being having the self restraint to be very well edited. I find that every wine on the list, either I really, really want to drink, or if I don't know it, I think, I should know that, and I will probably like it.
Well, it's. I would like to, you know, I suppose it'd be nice to take credit for that, but it's also natural constraints of space and over enthusiasm. Like I one thing that I. It would be nice to have a lot of space and a lot of and the clientele to support 10 Barolos or, you know, so many Burgundies that, you know, one could go nuts, but you just can't. Like, I there's so many other things that I'm enthused about and that and luckily they sell. Like, that's what kind of blows my mind. These things that, you know, I couldn't sell Jura back, you know, 10 years ago. It was so hard. So I think it's, I sort of feel like the climate is wonderful. And I don't think it's just Brooklyn. I think it's like I feel like even though there is something Brooklyn about Brooklyn, I think that it's certainly not limited. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, I think this phenomenon is in Manhattan as well, and if not in a lot of other places. But, you know, just the fact that people will buy a Georgian wine, you know, that's amazing. I mean, from the country of Georgia. So I feel like it's a general thing. Like, I think, like, my personal feeling is that everything is owed to Eric Asimov. Like, I feel like, and maybe it's because I have been, when I was in Paris for 5 years straight without coming here, I read him all the time. I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, this someone with a sane voice. It's opening the way for all these cool things, and it changed so much from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And
I also admire him so much. I just heard that he's going to be on the show, and I'm very, awesome. Very enthused by that prospect. Yeah,
that's I feel like that. I just loved reading him, and I really feel it changed a lot. And if you know, it just sort of opened the floodgates. It feels like that to me. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But. I don't know if I could have sold. I can't. I mean, the things that I'm mind-boggled by what we sell. And even without, you know, if I'm not on the floor, we have a few people that know a pretty fair amount about wine. But
and tell us a little bit about how that works. So if you're not on the floor, someone has to be able to sell Cote Rouennais or Muscadet that's 13 years old or whatever it is. How do you go about training, and how does that whole thing work?
It's certainly the hardest thing for me. I don't know. It's hard to say why. It's getting better, but basically, I have cheat sheets. You know, I have like information that everybody. I give them tests, and we do tastings, and. We have, I think, we do now have a bunch of great staff that is learning little by little, and which I'm sort of into. I was a kindergarten teacher in Waldorf and Montessori methods, and I think the Waldorf method is really awesome. Like, it's you have the same teacher for a long time, the teacher learns, and the enthusiasm that the teacher brings to his or her learning is supposedly picked up by the children, and I sort of feel like I like that. Everybody's at a different stage in their wine education and more or less enthused, and it's, you can play to that. You can sort of surf their enthusiasms a little bit, and I like it when each person has their own, his or her own. You know, group of cluster of go-to wines. Got this guy right now from Cuba, and he loves selling the Georgian wine. I just think that's awesome. Like, and everybody loves it, and he's happy with it. And now he's sort of into Georgian wines now. And, you know, so it's little by little. It's certainly not perfect. When I first got into one, after taking the Andrew Bell course, I was much better at training staff, because I think I was the information was newer to me, and I knew what it was like for it to be for them, and I guess.
So you're better right after the course than you think you are now, or better than
even though
the
I have
course?
I have almost 20 years, 15 years since then. More experience, I, you know, like I was saying, I can't believe that everybody on Earth doesn't know what malolactic fermentation is, and to have to explain that again is somehow, I don't know, tedious.
you forget when you know you're so into it, and you meet a lot of winemakers and you talk to them about it, and there are some things that are just given, and sometimes it's a reality check and brings you back. Like, oh wait, not everyone has met a lot of winemakers or been to a lot of wine regions.
Yeah, it's really, it's sort of, you know, I'm retarded like that. I have, I don't know. Yeah, it is. I'm in it so much that I do forget. And but I'm getting better now. Yeah.
We just started. We've been doing wine training classes for the whole, for all the different restaurants that can come to one central place. And they've done a class on vinification, and then one on viticulture, the vinification. Then we're going to jump into wines of northwestern Italy. And I figured I would do a lot of the history and laws and all of that together in the first class. And then I was like, wait a sec, they probably don't know much about that at all. So I made that its own class. We did a class just on wine history in Italy and the wine laws and geography. And I thought that was a good basis class. And I thought that would be part of the next one. But I think everyone responded to that well. But I think I could use some of your teaching tips, because I find myself up there sweating, hoping that people don't think that I'm the tool teacher, you know.
I just also while explaining these things to relative neophytes, I feel like there's no getting around it. One is a tool. Like, who cares about these things? And why should they care? Like, I mean, it does help, you know, it's a good thing, but I mean, for what they're doing. But, you know, I don't know, there's a lot of, it's hard, you know, the wine geek is certainly an apt term. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, before our show started, when you had gotten here early, and you guys can't see it at home, but, you know, we're in a shipping container that is, you know, it's lined with cedar plank, and there's actually a big bookcase, and I found you, like, going through all the books in the bookcase, like, oh, look at this one. Oh, that, the Blue Bottle Coffee book. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, I'm burdened with my bibliophilia. I have way too many books, both in New York and in Paris. I'm the guy who, when you go when invited to a party, disappears into the bookshelf and hides with the books. It is kind of absurd at this point, especially since. But I did get I got a Kindle, so that's.
Okay, can you tell us one wine book that you very much enjoy, and then one that's a non-wine related book?
Well, that's tough. That's like, what's your favorite wine? But yeah, actually just got this French book about Burgundy. And half of it I guess it's called a toponymy. It's basically, it's like an etymology of all the place names in Burgundy. It's like a dictionary of where these names come from. It's awesome. I mean, if I can I cuss? Like, I would say it's fucking awesome.
I think you can cuss.
Okay. And, like, you know, because there's so many different cultures that have passed through Burgundy, and it's almost like I would, you know, like Honseray, like, you know, there's so many names for you know, like the berry brambles that are at the top of the hills, you know, all along Burgundy, and like when the place was settled, like what, like Volnay, like I believe that it's the name is related to the view from these hills, like how the view sort of rolls away, stuff like that. That's my new favorite wine book.
What's it called?
Bourgogne. I'm sorry, I can't remember.
That's okay. we'll find
just,
it in the.
It's just a big.
It's, we'll it, put it, it up on the website. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can send it to you. It's you know, I got it at, like, Fnac. You know, it's like not a book that looks like something I would like, except it had that toponymy. Anyway, I like that. Other wine books. I like. Have you ever seen? You know that perfume guy. There's a book. He and his, I believe his wife.
Yes.
Luca Turin.
I bought it for my mom who loves perfume. So yeah, I know.
It's like a handbook and it describes like 1,000 or more perfumes, and his descriptions of olfactory phenomena of perfumes is inspiring to me for like wine. Like it's really I feel like wine people try to be more objective and I think he sort of with perfume there's more freedom to be subjective and to like make ridiculous poetic analogies, which I think is part of the fun, not that it's all that I guess it can get really ridiculous and stupid, but
for me, a lot of that is reading the table. It's like if you have any hint that table doesn't want to hear, then I go back to it's full bodied, it's dry, it's fruit forward. Right. You're gonna love it. But if it's a cool table who's getting into it, then you come up with something it's has crazy amounts of energy and
that's
bright shining wine that tastes like the seaside or something like that.
Yeah, it's certainly. I think that the most hard to teach and important skill for wine taste, sommeliering, is reading the mood of who's doing the ordering and what they feel like, and it's really hard. It's like, you never know, but when you get it, it's really fun.
Yeah,
turning people on to that.
Well, unfortunately, we've kind of come to the end. it's always such a pleasure. You'll definitely find me back at Vinegar Hill House, and especially Hillside. I mean, you guys did just such a great job with Hillside. I really loved it. So, and thank you, Bill, so much for coming on.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you next week on In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.